Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Samuel, look at the lad.
Joe, leave! Do the best thing, leave! Down while you can, Joe! Down while you can, Joe! Down while you can, Joe!
Across towards Giroud, and Giroud has tapped in a fourth. The final flourish from the Gunners.
Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Is this thing on? Is this thing on?
Yeah, it's on.
Hello there, and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. Hope you're well. I say brand new Arsecast, but of course it's not. You know it's not. What it is, however, is a brand new season. Yes, we've been talking all summer long, of course, on the Arsecast Extra, myself and James, apart from 1 week where we missed when I had a little bit of a holiday. Apart from that, we've been doing it all summer long. But look, the Friday Arsecast, it's the original. It's part of the routine. People like it on a Friday morning, and we're back, and we're here throughout the entire season, apart from when there's an interlull. And that's got nothing to do with me. But look, we won't worry about interlulls just at this moment in time. I hope you're well. I hope whatever you've been doing this summer, you've had a good time. I know many people just kind of switch off when the season ends. They say, that's it. I'm having nothing to do with any football whatsoever. I'm not going to look at blogs. I'm not going to look at newspapers. I'm not going to listen to podcasts. Of course, there are more of you out there these days who are like, no, fuck, season, off season, summer. No, give me stuff. We need stuff. Arsenal stuff, Arsenal news, transfer rumours, transfer gossip, transfer speculation, transfer this, transfer that. Give me more podcasts, give me vidcasts, give me TV, give me YouTube, give me whatever you can get me in terms of Arsenal something. They just need the Arsenal, they need it. But look, I know some of you don't, and some of you have been away and now you're back, so welcome on back in. It's been an all right summer, but too short. That's my problem with this summer. It's just been way too short, and from a point of view, personal point of view, I should point out, it's been shit. From a weather point of view, I'm talking here in Ireland. You know, I like a nice evening where you can sit out the back and drink a bottle of white wine and then go, oh, it's warm, isn't it? I think I'll drink another bottle of white wine. And that hasn't happened this summer really at all. You know, I know it's a very first world problem to bemoan the amount of times you've been able to use the barbecue, but I think once over the course of a summer is just not good enough. And I call on this government to rectify that by creating a giant dome of good weather or something. Come on, this is 2015. Should be able to do all kinds of shit now. But anyway, look, and it's been a very short summer because the season ended at the end of May, you might remember. Remember that? When we won the cup? That was good. Remember Tim Sherwood's face? Oh, look at him. He was so sad. It was hilarious. But that was the end of May. And here we are at the start of August, more or less. What date is it today? Ooh, it's the 6th of August. When you listen to this, it will be the 7th of August. Or it could be the 8th or the 9th. You could save it over the weekend. It doesn't really matter. But look, here we are. It's like 2 months and just a week or two and a bit months or whatever way you want to put that. It's just a bit too short, isn't it? Really, we should have more time off from football. But of course, there's European Championships next summer. And that's why we've got to get all the football in, squeeze it all in before we have the European Championships, which I believe I could be wrong here now, but it's been totally redefined by UEFA. It is a 48-team tournament held in 19 cities across Europe. Penalty shootouts and extra time are mandatory in every single game, even if somebody wins, just because that gives them more time to sell ads. That is what we're dealing with from a European Championship international football point of view. And hey, international football, hasn't that been fun this summer? FIFA, Sepp Blatter. Corruption. Who could have guessed? It was like a bolt from the blue. Like if you discovered your neighbour who likes to dress up as a clown and who's got a basement in his house and drives his clownmobile to schools when schools finish every day, and you find out that he's some kind of sick, evil, twisted, murdering pervert. It's like, who could have seen that coming? Not me. But look, we won't dwell on the bad things of football. We'll look at the good things of football. And that, of course, is Arsenal. And what a good preseason we've had. We beat Singapore, and we beat Everton, and we beat Wolfsburg, and we beat Lyon, and, of course, we beat Chelsea in the Community Shield. That was good. I enjoyed that. Just simply from the beating them point of view, but it was a good way to prepare ourselves for the new season. We might look at that a little bit later on, or not. Who knows? This is a very fly-by-night Arsecast. I should tell you, we've got two guests on the show for you today, so it could be a bit of a bumper edition, and we'll see where it takes us. But look, it's been all good. Transfer-wise, it's been a bit quiet, hasn't it? Of course, we brought in Petr Cech, and that means that Wojciech Szczęsny, he's gone to Roma. Made some saves for Roma already. Bit of a surprise there, I have to say, but he was in the papers talking about how he's going to come back a better goalkeeper and a stronger goalkeeper. And actually, I was talking to somebody who would be talking to somebody who might know, and they suggested to me that the idea was for Szczęsny to go out on loan and actually to come back. So he could use this loan to put last season behind him, the bad season, to sort of regain his goalkeeping mojo. And if he does that, then they view him still as somebody who could have a future at Arsenal and somebody who could perhaps push Petr Cech while he's the incumbent, the number one. And of course, if he doesn't have a good season at Roma, then it's like, well, see you later. That's what's probably going to happen. But the door is not fully closed on Wojciech Szczęsny. That's my startling bit of info for the opening part of this very first Arsecast of the new season. But apart from Cech and Szczęsny going out, not much happening apart from lots of loan deals. Of course, Chuba Akpom's gone on loan. Daniel Crowley's gone on loan. Isaac Hayden's gone on loan. Somebody else has probably gone on loan as well. And there could be another couple of loan deals along the way. Carl Jenko Jenkinson, of course, he's gone back to West Ham for another season. Another player who, on the face of it, you'd say, well, it's probably curtains for him. But again, the door is not fully closed, depending on how he does and depending on what Debuchy does and Bellerin do and all that kind of stuff. And we've brought in a whole raft of young players, lots of signings at youth level, including, of course, the Jeff. Yeah. Jeff the Jeff Jefferson. He is the man. He stood out during the Emirates Cup, and whether or not he gets some first-team action remains to be seen, but Arsene Wenger wants him to stay and train, and he's quite exciting, and we all like a young talent in which we can invest ourselves. Like, seriously, seriously invest ourselves, and we can dream of a great future for him in which one day he is standing there at the FIFA or the UEFA headquarters, wherever it is, wearing a garish purple suit, perhaps with some speckles, perhaps with some diamante, perhaps with some gold leaf just drifted over the top of it. And he's picking up the Ballon d'Or. He is the player of the year, the Jeff. Ladies and gentlemen, the winner of the play, it's the Jeff. And that's our guy. He's going to be our guy for the future. But, you know, we've been there before with a number of young players, and it doesn't quite work out. So I don't necessarily want to hype up his chances too much. But look, I'm going full in on this guy. Just telling you, for this season, he's going to be my guy at youth level. So look, what else should we do other than talk about Arsenal stuff with some other people? Because that's kind of what this podcast is about. So with me first to discuss the injury to Jack Wilshere, what that might mean for him, what it might mean for Arsenal in the transfer market, and what are Arsenal's plans for the transfer market in general, a man who should know. From The Telegraph, it's Jeremy Wilson. Hi there.
Hi.
Let's start with Jack Wilshere. After a really good pre-season, or getting most of a good pre-season under his belt, and with the injury problems he's had before, the news that he's suffered a hairline fracture of his fibula is something of a blow, both for Arsenal and for Jack Wilshere too.
Yeah, it's really, you know, you can't help but feel really sorry for him, because he looked, you know, at times with Jack Wilshere, with the sort of some of the, you know, the odd pictures we've had off field and that, you sort of sometimes think he's his own worst enemy. But he looked like this summer he'd really got his head down. He came back early from training. He finished the season well in the games that he played, more England games really, because he obviously struggled to get back into the team. But the sad thing was he had looked really good in pre-season. In the games in Singapore in particular, I thought he looked really good. And it's, it's worrying really, because it's the same area of his body that he's had most of his problems, and you just sort of worry whether there's some sort of weakness in those parts, whether it is just bad luck. But sort of on two levels really. One, that getting that rhythm, it seems to take him a bit of time. He seems to be the sort of person who needs to be match fit, needs to be playing, needs to be training, a bit like Rooney, I suppose. And also just on the sort of wider, longer term question about why this keeps happening. And they seem to be similar types of injuries that he gets now. We understand it as a collision in training, and obviously the Manchester United one with McNair last year was a tackle, so it could just be bad luck. Or, you know, without being a medical expert, it's very hard to say definitively, but you sort of worry whether he's more susceptible to these kind of injuries than most players.
Sure. I mean, the only way that he can show that he's not is by staying fit for a prolonged period. So, I mean, it could be just really bad luck that the McNair challenge and the one that happened in training have been such that they've caused injuries like this. But as well as the physical side of things, there must be something on the mental side that Jack Wilshere is going to have to deal with, because this is another period where he's going to spend on the sidelines. Everyone else is out playing. We know his enthusiasm for the game and how much he wants to play. And once more, he's going to find himself going through a period of rehab. That's also going to be really difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. I think with Jack as well, he's a sort of heart on his sleeve sort of person. You can't help but kind of warm to him in the sort of, you know, admittedly fairly brief interactions we get, but we do get a feel for the players, and he's very, very honest. He's one of the players he's most likely to stop and talk to the media. Very sort of what you sort of feel like with him. It's what you see is what you get. And I think he will find it difficult. But I think that he's a sort of personality. He just has a lot of enthusiasm for life, sort of thing. You get that impression. He's sort of person that throws himself into everything. So I don't think that'll be an issue in terms of him training and everything. I think he'll be doing the hours. He'll come in. I suppose the slight worry with you, someone with his sort of amount of energy, obviously has is the sort of off-field side a little bit. And again, I'm not an expert, and I don't know what he does all the time. But you just sort of see enough. I think there's enough hints that just to put a question mark. You know, is all I would say on that. I think that the players nowadays are cameras. You know, they can't do anything without it. Everyone's got a camera on their phone and whatever. Yeah. So things can get completely blown out of context. I understand that, and I might be. It might be wrong to even place that question mark, but I just sort of think with him, I just think we've seen enough little glimpses where there's enough where you sort of wonder a bit and you sort of hope that that having a spell on the sidelines doesn't sort of cause any temptations really that on that side that could just slightly slow his recovery. That's all I'd say on that. And I'm not saying I know anything at all really, but I suppose. He seems to be that sort of character that loves life and loves, you know, that throws himself into everything. And you just sort of think, you know, you hope that it must be very difficult really when you're like that to spend sort of 2 months where you know you can't play basically. So I hope he's able to do that. But he's obviously the training side of it is no problem for him. Mm. I mean, I don't think that's an issue. I'm sure he'll come back very fit.
Yeah, well, maybe he'll just throw himself 100% into training and nothing else. the Wilshire thing aside, though, the Arsenal squad going into the start of a new season is probably as strong as it has been for a very long time. I mean, even without Wilshire, he's not a first team starter. I think that was the challenge that he faced this season, was trying to get back into the first team on a regular basis and trying to find where exactly he fits into that team. So at the moment, there's pretty good cover there in pretty much every position.
Yeah, I suppose that's the one slight. It'd be interesting to see whether this causes Arsene Wenger to think about whether he gets a central midfielder, because we know early in the year he was looking at it, and I expected him to bid for Schneiderlin. So I know that Southampton certainly expected him to bid for Schneiderlin.
Was that before or after the Coquelin emergence?
Yeah, around January. So really before, really, because it was sort of Coquelin had just got into the team, but wasn't really at the time where he'd established himself completely, as he did by the end of the season. So, and I think that Wenger was really looking at the summer before deciding about that area. And I think the way that Jack played in pre-season, where he was obviously very good, and Aaron Ramsey looked like he was back to where he was a couple of years ago. And the fact that Coquelin and Cazola seemed to sort of carry on where they left off. I think that, and obviously Arteta was back at cover as well. I think that sort of convinced him, okay, we've got a lot here, because, you know, obviously Oxlade-Chamberlain could play in that position, and Flamini, although Flamini, I think, you know, they would let him go if they could, but he's still there as well. So I just wonder whether with Wilshere, because the worry clearly is that this injury, okay, it might be 6 to 8 weeks, but how quickly will he get back, and will something related happen again? Really, you can't, you know, it's sad to say, but you can't at the moment, at this stage of this, after what's happened, you can't really be sure how much Jack's going to play this season. So I wonder whether that will cause a rethink, because if something happens to Coquelin, then you do sort of wonder that because of how Jack had sort of played that role for England, you wonder whether he could come in and play that sort of more defensive role.
Sure.
Obviously, Arteta's the natural cover, but I think that's a question mark. But overall, as you said, Jack, as things stood, was probably not in the starting team anyway, or was trying to re-establish himself in the starting team. So, and it's not really been since 4 or 5 years, I think, since sort of around that 2010-11 season, where you really thought if Wilshere wasn't in the starting team, the team was a lot weaker. I think the last sort of 3 or 4 years, he's tended to be in and out a bit. But I think it is still quite a big blow, because I just sort of thought the way Wilshere was playing in the summer, you sort of thought he could actually bring something extra. He would make a difference. And maybe I didn't sort of think that so much last season and the season before. I thought he was still not quite fully himself, but I thought he was sort of showing signs that he was back there. I suppose with the rest of the squad, it is stronger than it has been. There's still that slight question mark about whether he gets a striker. We know he likes Benzema, but it doesn't sort of feel like that's very likely to happen. So you'd think nothing else would happen. But I think if it does, it would be in striker and then possibly a midfielder, depending on sort of how he views things in the light of Jack's injury.
I guess it's sort of out of his hands to a certain extent, because if we look at someone like Benzema, then maybe he's only available if Real Madrid do something, or if he stirs up things at Real Madrid in order to come to Arsenal. So, I mean, it seems if anything else is going to happen, it'll happen later in the window rather than imminently.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're exactly right. I don't think it will. My sort of hunch would be that it's unlikely to happen. And I think that Sanchez, if Welbeck comes back okay, and Giroud, and obviously Theo, can, there's sort of four people that can play, but if that out and out striker is probably Giroud's the only one, maybe Welbeck could play there a bit. But as you say, what the club, the sort of level that the club have reached, you're talking about to make a difference. You're talking about someone of that 40 odd million pound bracket, someone who's better than a sort of Welbeck in that role. So you're talking, you know, there's not that many of them in Europe. There's probably only 5 or 10 players, and most of them are all settled at a club. So it's quite hard to, as you say, it depends a lot on what happens at other clubs and what happens with other people, because there's no point in just buying, you know, someone like Llorente's been linked. Okay, you can never say never on who might come in and work, but you would think someone like that, you'd sort of look at it and think, well, what's the point, really? Is that any different to Welbeck and Giroud, really? So in order to do something, you're sort of looking at that next bracket, and there's not very many of them, and there's even less of them available.
Very true. All right, we'll wait and see what happens, and we keep an eye peeled on your stuff in the Telegraph for all the inside information. Jeremy, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andrew. Thank you.
If you want to follow Jeremy on Twitter, you can do that at JW Telegraph, at JW Telegraph. Thank you very much indeed to him for his time. Now, before we get on to the second part of the show and our second guest, just a couple of things to mention. Firstly, if you do like the show, and I assume you do because you're listening and still listening, if you are hate listening, I reckon you'd have tapped out well before now. But look, if you are a fan and you like what we do, please give us a rating or a review, or indeed both, on iTunes, because it helps the podcast, it pushes us up the charts, and more people can find out about it and everything else. So that would be very much appreciated. And I did want to talk very briefly about the plans to introduce a little bit more advertising to the podcast. It's not going to be ridiculous. We're not going to stop every 10 minutes to have a break. There might be a little ad at the start, and there might be an ad in the middle. I think that's the way it's going to work. I have to iron out all the details as yet. The only significant change, I'm not 100% sure on this, is the SoundCloud thing might go a different way, and we use a different player. But if you subscribe in iTunes, if you listen in Stitcher, if you want to download the MP3 directly, if you want to listen to it off the Arseblog webpage, you can do all that. Any of your podcasting apps, nothing will change in terms of your subscriptions or how you can consume the podcast. It just might be a little ad at the start and one in the middle, and that's it. And that will help us. And, you know, I hope you appreciate why we'll do this, because this is a huge part of what I do. This website, it's grown, as many of you know, significantly over the years. It's become bigger and larger. There's more to it. And when you create the monster, you have to feed the monster, of course. And the monster, it's a great monster. I'm not saying that I've got anything against monsters. I don't. This is a fantastic monster, and I want to be able to do this for a long time. And I want to be able to do it as well as I can possibly do it, as professionally. And part of that is being able to earn some money from it, because essentially what we're doing is we're creating something and we're giving it out, and, you know, it's free. and I want it to remain free, and it will always be free. But, you know, the offset of that is us being able to try and bring in a few quid from sponsorship. So I hope people understand why we're going to do that. It's not going to be a case that it'll be ads here, there and everywhere. But look, you know, I'll give you more details on that when I have them exactly. But that's just sort of kite flying this whole idea here, that, you know, 30 seconds of an ad at the start in return for half an hour, 45 minutes. I think it's all right, isn't it? I think so. All right. Okay, well, let's get on with the second part of the show. And my second guest is one of the co-presenters of the Second Captains podcast here in Dublin. We spoke during the week. This was recorded before we knew the extent of Jack Wilshere's injury. So there is some mention of Jack in this particular conversation. But I just wanted to put it in the context of us not knowing that he was going to be out with the hairline fracture at that point. So this is the conversation that I had with Ken Early from Second Captains. All right, joining me now on the Arsecast, I'm delighted to welcome from Second Captains, Ken Early. Hello. With a mouthful of coffee.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm well. We're going to talk Premier League, generally speaking, not necessarily just Arsenal, but I want to go at it from the hyperbolic claims that we get from the media, from Sky, from BT, about how the Premier League is the best league in the world. Mm. And last year it was kind of shit, really.
It was terrible, yeah. Well, Thierry Henry has changed it to, he now says in his ad, "Do I have to tell you this is the best league in the world?" Which isn't quite saying that it is. You know, so he's just sort of suggesting that it might be.
Right.
Yeah, it was terrible. I mean, I'm hoping it's going to be better this time, but it was really, really terrible. And, you know, the game on Sunday was terrible, and the only thing about it was these two older men being kind of rude to each other, and that was actually the most interesting thing about the game. And if that's what they're relying on to sort of sell billions of pounds worth of television contracts every year, they're going to need a little bit more than that.
Actually. Yeah, they did seem to be very focused on this non-event. Like, it was essentially nothing happened, but it's become a huge thing. You know, it wasn't that Wenger tripped up Mourinho or Mourinho sort of gave Wenger a slap. They just didn't shake hands.
Well, twice.
Yeah, but, you know, that's okay, though, isn't it?
It should be okay. I mean, it was an interesting thing to see because it was it kind of was just Mourinho acting crazy. I mean, the first handshake that didn't happen was just the usual one that never happens.
Yeah.
Then the second one was Mourinho doing this weird thing of putting himself right there at the middle. I mean, he's finished now. His day is over. He's supposed to be, you know, back in the dressing room, whatever, talking to his team or doing his press interviews. But there he is, pumping the hand of every Arsenal player. Yeah. I mean, what is going on here? You know, what if you're Arsenal Wenger coming down the line, you're seeing this happen. Jose Mourinho was there greeting every single one of your players, getting his paws on your players.
Yeah.
I'd be a little bit annoyed.
Yeah, a touch of class from Mourinho, nothing as they said on television. It had nothing to do with class whatsoever, didn't it?
No, it was the exact opposite of class.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, I don't even know what it was. It was kind of motiveless malice. Nothing good comes out of it, even from Mourinho's point of view, apart from attention.
Yeah.
And maybe that's kind of what the insight everyone's been missing. I mean, Mourinho is an unbelievable figure in Europe. I mean, think about him. Who else could do this? Literally nobody else in Europe could do this. To go around several of the major countries in Europe, getting paid 15 to 20 million, no matter what country he's in, speaking to the country in their own language and becoming one of the most hated figures in that country's national discourse. Literally, there isn't a single other person in Europe who would be able to do this.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal ability. He's a phenomenally talented man, but, I mean, what he's doing is just... I don't know if he's using his powers always for good.
No, I don't think so. He's using them for himself anyway, because we weren't talking after the game, as I just mentioned.
Is he happy, though?
Is he happy? He probably is.
I don't think he is. He seems really angry. In fact, the closer his life gets to what should be some kind of state of contentment or stability, the more he just wants to ruin it. I mean, he hates the whole idea of stability. Just something in him rebels against it, and he wants to tip over the table and just make a scene. You know?
He was talking this week about how the fights with Abramovich were a thing of the past.
He's just reminding everyone of it. He's just reminding Abramovich. Remember how it was last time? Why are we, you know, when are we going to sign someone to cover for Diego Costa? I know I've got Falcao. I mean, we have to do that for it's great that we're giving Falcao another chance. But, you know, they need somebody else. I mean, at the moment, I look at the Chelsea team. The first team is good and the squad is not.
Yeah.
Diego Costa is injured. Fabregas gets injured. Matic gets injured. Who do they have?
Mm.
They didn't have anyone of that on that level. So,
I mean, how do you see them in the context of the Premier League this season as title challengers? Clearly, as you say, the first 11 is very good, but can they, with their methods, keep everybody fit the way they did for most of last season?
I mean, they somehow managed to do it, but it wasn't as though they got into the last phase of the season, you know, fit as a fiddle.
Mm.
I mean, Matic looked like a mummy at the end of the season. He was kind of lurching around, like his joints were all aching. You know, he was getting subbed off in games, which he didn't think happened to him, because he was wrecked. He played, you know, the whole season. Fabregas, obviously, we all know what happened to him. I mean, maybe he's only got 35 games a season really in him at the level that Mourinho needs. Hazard is obviously brilliant. But then Diego Costa's great, but he always seems to have a problem with his hamstring. So I wouldn't say that you can't bank on those players always being available.
Yeah. Are you surprised they haven't spent more?
I am. I don't understand what they're doing. And I think Mourinho keeps sort of hinting at it. I mean, they've still got time. They've still obviously got, like, you know, a few weeks. But Mourinho keeps kind of saying, oh, you know, like this rubbish that he says about how he wants to be loyal to. He feels like he owes his players something, which, you know, is a complete lie. I mean, you know, it's...
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
The exact opposite of what he believes, right?
Yeah.
And he's saying all this because he's just trying to remind people. I mean, his main thing so far has been pointing out how much everyone else is spending.
Yeah.
You know, and everyone else is buying the league now. Oh, I remember you were all saying I was trying to buy the league. Well, actually, everyone else is trying to buy the league. And, you know, it's not even the title contenders, he says, you know, hinting at Liverpool, I suppose. You know, even they've spent like 70 million already.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, although, you know, they did sell a big player as well. But it's like, I think when Mourinho talks that way continually, there's always a sort of a point to it. It's not just like, how much money they've spent.
Yeah, he very rarely says anything that isn't pointed or isn't trying to make somebody sit up and take notice of it, that there's always an angle with him.
Mm. Which is one of the tiresome things about listening to him speak,
yeah,
you know.
And also the fact that when he says those things, or when he says certain things, that he's not necessarily challenged by the press the way that he was in Spain.
It's
either,
well, no, that's true, but, like, I mean, it's a strange one. I mean, I sometimes wonder what people expect to happen in these press conferences. I mean, the job of the journalist at the press conference isn't, it's not like a cross-examination, really.
Sure, but, you know, when someone says something particularly outrageous, and I'm not thinking of any examples right here, but, you know, there's always... You go, hang on a minute.
Like when,
even that, like when
say that Rafa's wife needs to get back in the kitchen and sort out his diet because he looks.
Well, what way did you perceive those comments? Was that like misogynistic comment about Rafa's wife, or just a comment about Rafa Benitez being too fat?
Well, it was meant to be an insult at. I think what he was trying to do was just insult Benitez for being fat. And maybe inadvertently also revealed his sexual misogynistic views. It was one of those, oh no. Sometimes you just reveal something about yourself, you can't really help it. I mean, it's one thing to say, oh, everything I say is controlled and so on. But sometimes you just blurt something out that reveals kind of something about who you are. I mean, for instance, last week there was, you know, the Hulk Hogan thing and all the...
Sure.
There was like a lot of Arsenal players being tweeted at Hulk Hogan. For instance,
that was really weird, I thought.
It was really strange. But one of the photos I remember was, we were talking about this on podcast, one of the photos was Rio Ferdinand. Rio Ferdinand's in the photo with someone. And I said, you know, I was kind of just going through name. I was like, oh, here's Arshav and here's Welbeck. You know, here's Rio Ferdinand with some guy. The some guy is Drake, right? I'm like, you know, so I said there's some guy. It's Drake. I didn't recognize Drake. Okay, so... You got me.
I wouldn't recognize Drake if he walked in this room right now.
Yeah, I recognize him now. I have to say. Yeah, you've learned your lesson. I think I recognize him now, but it was like, okay, all right. I didn't recognize Drake. I mean, essentially, I'm one step removed from Hulk Hogan here. Right? He doesn't recognize anyone in these photos. I'm just not recognizing half of the celebrities that I see. But, you know, I think Mourinho, in meaning to just insult Rafa for being fat, also revealed himself to be something of a sexist, which, you know, to be honest, is it that big of a surprise? I don't know.
All right. Well, look, let's move away from Mourinho, as amusing as all this is, and look at perhaps what the two Manchester clubs have done in terms of their spending. Van Gaal, he's interesting in the way that he's going about his business there.
Purging Van Persie.
Yeah. And Valdez, you know, if you step out of line in any small way, you're pretty much done with him. But what about the players that they brought in? Schneiderlin, Schweinsteiger, Depay.
Well, they're kind of strong players. I mean, Schneiderlin's very strong. Schweinsteiger should be, although Guardiola, I see, is trying to... I thought it was amazing what Guardiola said about him, actually. Mm. It was reminding me of what of Trapattoni talking about Stephen Reid, you know. Oh, this guy, you know. I mean, we wait to see him. I mean, the fact is, you know, the last 3 years, he hasn't been in shape. What? That's unbelievable that you would say that. I mean, Schweinsteiger obviously reckons it's not really the case. And he has played a good few games, maybe through injury. Maybe that's some of the problem. I mean, I think Schweinsteiger's a really good player. I suppose it's like Guardiola said, if he stays fit, he'd be very good.
Yeah.
Schneiderlin is good. Depay, I don't know. I mean, the only time I've really seen Depay was in the World Cup, and I didn't think he was, you know, he wouldn't have necessarily stood out to me as amazing, but everybody says this guy is brilliant. And I mean, I've watched the same YouTube Depay as everyone, and yeah, he looks very good in his YouTube.
There's a lot of players that look good on YouTube, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm sure he's very good. I mean, there's always like a good Dutch player, isn't there? I mean, there always is.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's the current. I mean, it's been Arjen Robben for a long time,
and yeah.
Van Persie, maybe not so much Van Persie. I mean, it's interesting that Van Gaal just getting rid of. I mean, Van Persie's gone, and it's without a whimper from anyone. No one cares about that.
Yeah.
It kind of showed how far he fell. Di Maria just didn't seem to have worked out, and again, it shows the desperation that Manchester United have for Louis van Gaal to succeed. That essentially there's no criticism of. I get the impression if things were to lose four games out of six or something, there could be an absolute explosion of rage against them. I get the impression that everyone is sort of holding their tongue, waiting to see how it's gonna turn out. But if they do start to lose confidence, that could happen very quickly.
Yeah. Manchester City have brought in Raheem Sterling, of course, £49 million from Liverpool. Again, what did you make of that? What did you make of that move and how it came about? It was an inevitable move, given the way that things have broken down between him and Brendan Rodgers.
Yeah, and, you know, Brendan Rodgers keeps losing his best players every year. And... You know, to me, I find it amazing when you've got a player like that. I mean, he's 20 years old, that you can't, you know, at least command the first few years of his career. If it says a few different things. I mean, it says, first of all, that the management of that situation in Liverpool was very bad, both by Rodgers with the player directly and by the club with the player and his agent. They should have given him a contract before the World Cup. They never did.
Mm.
And then, you know, his agent is obviously the one who gets all the criticism. And the agent, the way that he spoke, you know, publicly was stupid. I mean, it was crass. It was kind of, oh, Carragher's a knob. The club have been, you know, and no, he wouldn't sign for $900,000. And you're thinking, like, how much did he have to drink before he gave this? You know, this is ridiculous. Like, he sounds like an idiot. Who would hear that and want to deal with a guy like this? You know what I mean? It's a risk, you know.
Man City.
Yeah, well, of course. Ultimately, Man City prepared to sort of hold their nose and get the player. But, you know, I don't think he's doing himself, Eddie Ward, doing himself any favours. On the other hand, look at the job that he's done for Sterling. He's got Sterling from a club that's really had a terrible season, not going to be in the Champions League, away from a manager he clearly doesn't get on with.
Yeah.
He's got him more money than he was being offered even at the maximum by Liverpool to join a team which has got more chance of actually winning something than Liverpool do. So you kind of got to say that he's delivered for his player.
Mm.
You know, he's maybe he hasn't done it in the smoothest or most diplomatic way, but he's got Sterling a pretty good deal. Now it's a question of whether Sterling is, you know, going to crumple under the weight of, you know,
expectation and the price tag. And
I think Sterling is a really good player.
Mm.
Ridiculously good, actually. I don't know if he really got the credit maybe that he should have got for not so much last season, the season before. He played brilliantly. And to play at that age, to play that well at that age is very promising. You know, if you can do that when you're 18 or 19, if you keep improving, then by the time you're 24, you're going to be an absolutely amazing player. So the question is whether he's going to keep going.
Do you think that was part of why he wanted to leave, that maybe he felt under Rodgers he couldn't keep improving?
Well, I think that's the case. I mean, to me, when he had the brilliant season, there was a few players at Liverpool who did, and the reason was that they had Suarez there, and Gerrard as well had a very good season. But they had kind of really, really top players to sort of look up to and emulate. And this is something that you hear at every single club where there's a player. You listen to the Manchester United, you know, sort of class of 92 guys obviously going on about Cantona. You know, they're always saying, oh, Cantona was amazing. You know, we just watch him in training. But, you know, Van Persie says the same thing about training with Bergkamp at Arsenal. You know, just watch him in training and the kind of stuff, his attitude just to that. It changes, it lifts the standards of everyone. Suarez was clearly doing that at Liverpool. I mean, Brendan Rodgers was the one getting the credit, and they got Rodgers on the long-term contract, but, you know, it was clearly...
Yeah.
It was not Brendan Rodgers' doing, really. And I think Sterling, Coutinho, Henderson, all these guys really, you know, were kind of inspired by what Suarez was doing. I mean, it's not just the fact that when Sterling runs through the defence, the ball magically materialises in front of him, played there by Suarez. That's part of it, but it's more, I think, the attitude, the kind of infectious sort of, oh, this is what it means to be a world-class player. It actually has an inspiring effect. Who's there at Liverpool now? He's actually supposed to be doing that now. He's supposed to be the guy who does that for everyone else.
Yeah.
And he's too young for that.
Yeah.
He can't do it, so... I think it's he probably needed to be out of there.
Right,
it's a badly managed situation by Liverpool.
Sure. All right, then what about Arsenal this season? There's a lot of talk about how they still need a striker, but in terms of the overall squad, how do you view the way Arsenal are set up for this season?
I think Arsenal should win the league. I think they should. And if they don't, then Wenger's got to go. No. Well, at some point, it's kind of like, well, when are you going to do it? Like, seriously, when are you going to do it?
Mm.
I mean, I'm kind of impressed that he's got back to this point. I didn't think that. I thought he was gone. I thought that I didn't think Arsenal under Arsene Wenger would ever actually get back to the situation they're in now, where they actually look like one of the, in my opinion, at least the two teams most likely to win the league. I thought that he had just lost too much confidence. I mean, I was at quite a few games at the Emirates, say 2011, kind of 2011, 2012, and really just some bad atmospheres at those games.
Mm.
Like, just, I remember one game, the one against Man United, where they lost 2-1.
Yeah. The Oxlade-Chamberlain substitution.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was unbelievable. When do you see a stadium against a manager like that? And then, you know, a couple of years later, the manager has managed to come back that late in his career as well. You know, that's so far into his Arsenal career. I thought it had kind of turned decisively against them. There was no return, and that was wrong. You know, he has managed to put together a team which I think has got, the reason I think they should win the league is because the other strong team in the league is Chelsea, and I just don't think Chelsea are going to score enough. I think Arsenal are going to score a lot more than Chelsea, and most of the games, the Premier League games, it's just about scoring two or three goals. you know, I mean, it's kind of a simple league in that sense, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like it's just like, can you win? Can you beat enough of these teams? It doesn't even... People go on about the big games between the big teams and so on. But, you know, actually what really matters is winning, not drawing your games against...
The rest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Win those games, don't draw them. And the secret to winning them is scoring more. And Arsenal, just look at Arsenal's team. They've got a lot more goals in the team than Chelsea. Like, Chelsea have got Costa, Hazard. Who else scores in their team?
Mm.
Like, Willian barely shoots. Never mind, scores. You know, they've got a few sort of players like that. You know,
yeah.
Guys who are never going to get a goal. With Arsenal, I think almost everybody in the team is capable of scoring. And now they've got a goalkeeper who's unlikely to throw as many in as previous goalkeepers. I just think it's all kind of set up. Uh-huh. And yeah, they also have... I thought the same thing was happening. What I was talking about with Suarez, with Alexis Sanchez at Arsenal, where they've got a guy who's like just got a different sort of attitude from everyone else. Like it's kind of he's showing them something a little bit different. I mean, Mesut Ozil does not have this thing that Alexis Sanchez has.
No, he doesn't. No,
I mean he's a good player, and you know he knows how to pass the ball where he wants to go. But he's not. You know, Sanchez is the kind of guy who you know. He's a real competitor, and you need a couple of guys. And if you have a guy like Sanchez, suddenly maybe Ozil kind of is feeling a bit better about himself.
Mm.
You know, I think he's a good, he's a kind of a leader and an example to the others. So, yeah, there aren't any excuses. Basically, if they don't win it this year, it's time for Wenger to go.
You're all right. Well, I mean, the balance is there anyway in terms of experience and quality. It's like the squad is better than it has been for a very long time.
Well, I mean, say for instance. You know, a couple of years ago, it was like, oh, Jack Wilshere was kind of a big... people were... If you're thinking, well, Arsenal have a good team, a lot of that would be based on, because Wilshere's going to come good.
Yeah.
Wilshere's, you know, got so much... He's got so much potential. He's got so much ability. He is kind of injury-prone, but hopefully this will be his year. You know what I mean? Whereas now, it's like Wilshere's just a squad... Wilshere's just a squad player now.
Yeah.
He's not... You don't need Wilshere to play. He doesn't need to kick a ball this season. They can get by without him. I mean, I don't even know if Wenger still is even really that. I mean, how many times are you going to be caught smoking? You know, you're an idiot. I'm not suggesting being caught smoking or being caught smoking is, you know, is a capital offence for a football
player.
Sure. But it just shows you what he must be like to deal with.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's just the tip of an iceberg. It's like, okay, well, I mean, he just repeatedly can't. He can't stop doing this one stupid thing. Is this the only stupid thing that he can't stop doing? I doubt it.
Yeah.
You know, but, okay, the fact is they no longer are relying on him. If he has a good season, he might still have a good season. He might still be a big player for them.
Mm.
But they don't need him to be. They've got enough players there that it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And that's why I think, you know, when you look at the squad, there's a lot. I think, say with Chelsea, if key players are missing, they don't really have players of that level to come in. But with Arsenal, I think... Almost everyone apart from Sanchez, they have a guy who can do what that guy's doing.
Yeah.
So it's looking good.
Do you see any change in the top four? Mm. Can anyone come into the top four?
Well, I mean,
can Liverpool do it with the players that they've brought in?
They might, but I mean, who could have any confidence in Liverpool, really? I mean, they just... I mean, Rodgers is a... I mean, they've got this difficult start as well, so it's, you know... They've got to play Man City, Man United, you know, Bayern Munich.
Like Arsenal.
Real Madrid, 1959. They have to play all these things. In the first seven games is all these. So it's not going to be... You could see Brendan Rodgers being sacked 2 months into the season. That's something that could quite easily, feasibly happen. Although if he gets through it in some kind of, you know, shape, you know, they don't lose all those games, then maybe he's kind of set up quite well for the rest of the year. You know, maybe the hardest bit is done.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's impossible because no one has really seen this team play yet.
It's
almost a completely new team. So they've got some players who should be, you know, theoretically should be good. But no one knows yet if they're going to be able to sort of...
Pull it all together.
No, and you'd have to say probably not. I mean, so when was the last time that happened? A sort of ragtag bunch of misfits came together one summer and, you know, won the Premier League title. I can't think of too many times that happened.
No.
But, you know, getting into the top four, I mean, to get into the top four means finishing ahead of Man United, Man City. It's not as though Man United or Man City are, you know, it's not as though you're looking at these teams going, wow, you know, no one could ever finish ahead of those guys.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't back, you'd still have to back either of them to finish ahead of
Sure.
Liverpool, I think.
Sure.
I mean, I think City maybe are looking a little bit weak. I mean, I think they're treading water a bit, you know?
Are they just sort of biding their time for next year when Pep Guardiola can come along and take on another really, really difficult footballing challenge by going to a club with lots of money? And
well, it looks like it, doesn't it? But I mean it's kind of... I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Like with Guardiola. Like, I remember when he joined Bayern thinking, oh, this is like... Come on, Pep. You know... this is hardly, you know, like pretty much the point that you're making there. This is not a difficult challenge, but actually, it was really difficult. It was. I mean, they had not won the treble, but when he signed for them in the December or January, they went and won the treble, which was like Christ Almighty. But it was a really difficult thing for him to do, to come in there and to try and sort of teach Granny how to suck eggs. Like, that's not a that was actually, in hindsight, a very difficult
job. Yeah, but from a domestic point of view, it's not a difficult league for them to win.
No, it's not. But the domestic, nobody cared. Bayern Munich doesn't even care about that anymore. I mean, from the City one is completely different. I suppose City is more of a blank slate.
Yeah.
City is like, I can come in and be the absolute, I can design this club from the ground up. They'll just throw everything out. It won't be like Bayern, where Bayern are like, well, you know, we also know how to play football here at Bayern Munich.
Mm.
Yes, we had FC Bayern Munich, and we also know a thing or two about the game, Herr Guardiola. So, you know, I think that's been an obvious tension there. I mean, it's a weird one, actually, because with Guardiola there, you get media coverage of Bayern. Half of it is like, you know, half the press are obviously Bayern supporters.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, so half them want to support Guardiola because he's like the Bayern manager, and so they always support him. But half them, then, if Bayern lose, it's like, oh, you know, if Bayern lose the semi final of the Champions League, it's like, what? You know, this isn't good enough.
We
would have won with a German manager. But then there's a whole section of there's a whole sort of liberal section of the press which gets really angry at Germans criticizing Guardiola because they see it as like insular. Oh, here we have, you know, some German
little Germaners,
ex-footballer. Yeah, little Germaners going, oh, you know, if only we had a bit more of the German fighting spirit, and if we, you know, a German coach, and Jupp Heynckes, you know, and Guardiola doesn't understand tiki taka, and this is, you know, this is ridiculous, you know, actually all the players love Guardiola, and, you know, so it's not even about Guardiola.
Yeah,
it's about like kind of resisting this, you know, what they see is like, oh, these guys are against Guardiola because he's a foreigner. You know,
sure,
what I mean?
Sure.
So it's a really interesting situation with him. In England, I think it would be, they're obviously more used to foreign managers. They're more respectful anyway, to begin with, I think. Like, look at, you know, most of these star coaches really get bowed down to, I think. And yeah, I can see how it'd be a good job for him, you know. I mean, Manchester City, maybe Manchester United might be available. I mean, Manchester City just seems like a sort of a, if you were
Guardiola. Well, they have the two Barcelona guys as the head of football development and all that kind of guy.
Yeah. Juve Gierstein and Soriano, yeah. The former airline executive.
But we know how easily Barcelona people can fall out with each other as well. It's quite political, that club as well. So.
Yeah, he always seems to get on with those guys. I don't know. I mean, the point about City is, I do think that it's as though they've kind of said, okay, well, we think we might get him next year, and it's worth just
sticking with Pellegrini
just have a holding pattern. So I don't think they're going to win the title or anything. Maybe they will. It depends whether how many injuries Aguero gets this season.
Yeah. All right. So it's Arsenal for the league for you.
I think Arsenal should win the league. I mean, Chelsea are obviously massive favourites to win the league, and the reason for that is, everybody assumes that, you know, Mourinho will just find a way to win 29 games, and, you know, Wenger will, they'll have the usual meltdown at some point. And, but, I mean, I just think Arsenal have more goals than the team. So I was probably thinking the same thing last year, and it didn't happen. But I don't know. I mean, something about Mourinho at the moment doesn't really, something about that team, the way that it's set up, the way that he's behaving doesn't really convince me. He doesn't last anywhere for, I mean, I know he's saying, oh, you know, I want to stay here, I want to be here for, you know, till I'm 70, I want to coach till I'm 70 anyway, and I want to be like, you know, Ferguson. He's nothing like, he's
but
never
where
like
can
that.
He go again, though? That's the thing, he's kind of running out of places where he can actually go.
I don't think so. I think he's still got plenty of places who would take him, you know. Man City, say.
Yeah.
Say if Guardiola's like, sorry, actually, I don't like you. Van Gaal has left Manchester United, I'm going to join them instead. You know, Man City would be like, okay, we'll just go to the complete opposite.
But Chelsea is the club of his life. He couldn't go to another English club.
Yeah, he could. Yeah. I mean, he says he wants to stay for a long time, but he just can't. I just don't think he's psychologically able to do it. And maybe it's because of his, you know, the conflict model or whatever it is he calls it. Basically, you go around just insulting everyone all the time and like in the hope of provoking a reaction, you know. Well, you just do that enough time and you lose your job.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, look at him already last week before the games had started. Pellegrini, you know, he had to go Pellegrini. Obviously, Wenger was a loser, you know, can't, you know. If that had been me, I would have tried to find a way, you know. Why is it always going against my team, you know? Rafa's fat, his wife needs to get back in the kitchen. That's before anything has happened. It's insane. It's crazy. Like, Alex Ferguson never went on like that. Yeah. You can't do that.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's just... Mourinho has got a certain amount of the power and influence Ferguson used to have, but you have to conserve it in order to be able to use it. You can't just be willy nilly.
It's a blunderbuss.
You just can't do that. You know, eventually, you just piss off a critical mass of people who are kind of like, this guy's just, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean, if that's happening on the outside, you imagine what's happening on the inside as well.
Sure.
Oh, we've got to get rid of Juan Mata. Like, why? We've got to get rid of Kevin De Bruyne. You know, he's a weakling. Oh, really? Is he? Yeah. I mean, who do you have now? Willian. You're left with Willian. You keep buying, like, they buy Salah.
Quadrado.
They buy Quadrado, nothing happens.
Yeah.
So he's got this other problem, which is that it's not as though players are really performing brilliantly under him.
Mm.
Apart from Hazard, he's the only one. And John Terry.
Yeah.
John Terry, with his whatever evil power keeps him going. He's like in this state of grace now. Last season, one of his best ever seasons. He's just like, as he gets more kind of old and like sour looking, you know, he's just getting better and better.
Yeah, after every game, suckling from Mourinho to regain his vitality.
He's just, I mean, remember him, wasn't it at Arsenal last season, actually? There was a 0-0 at Arsenal. Was that how they won the league?
There was a draw. Yeah, it was a 0-0 at Arsenal.
The one where Oscar got.
Yeah.
But was that the one where Terry was celebrating on the pitch?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it means a lot to him. You know, that John Terry does have, I know, especially in Ireland, you know, it's no one has ever really had much time for John Terry. But, I mean, you got to say, like, he's got something, you know. And Mourinho is able to, I mean, the way that Mourinho plays suits John Terry because he's always just standing on his own 18-yard line. You know, he doesn't ever have to
run.
That thing that happened to him. The thing that Van Persie did to him in that 5-3 game is never, ever, ever going to happen to John Terry ever again in his career. He will never be that far forward on the field with nobody behind him. It's just never going to happen.
Oh.
So, I don't know. But, I don't know. I'm not hugely... I think if he's fighting with everyone outside already, I think he's a bit tense. I don't know what's going on inside the squad, but I can't imagine that... It's much better than the outside situation.
Well, we've come full circle on this one. Started with Mourinho, we're going to end with him. Ken Early, thank you very much.
No, Audrey, thanks a million for having me.
There you go. That was Ken Early. Thank you very much indeed to him. You can find him on Twitter @KenEarlys, or as part of the Second Captains podcast, which you can find on iTunes. Just search for Second Captains. They're on Twitter @SecondCaptains. They're also on the IrishTimes.com, which is where they live. But just search Second Captains. You can do it on iTunes. Subscribe. It is a truly great sports podcast. Right. So look, here we are. We've been going quite a while on this particular episode. We've got to look ahead to our first game of the season against West Ham. Injury news, team news. Wilshere obviously out. Danny Welbeck, Thomas Rosicki, they're out. They're on their way back, though. They're on a progressive recovery, according to Arsene Wenger, whatever that might mean. And then, of course, Alexis was back this week. And I have to say, I really like this from Arsene Wenger today. Alexis, who's just come back from 4 weeks of holidays after going all the way in the Copa America with Chile. And he said, I don't think he will be involved on Sunday. It's a bit early. Maybe. Imagine even contemplating it. And it's probably all right because he's Alexis. He's just the super fit guy. I'd be surprised. I think it would be a bit of a risk, to be perfectly honest. But you just never know with Arsene Wenger or with Alexis. I mean, if he was asked, are you okay to play? He'd be like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm absolutely fine. I'm not jet lagged. Don't need any fitness stuff after my break. No, been sort of running on the beach. Yeah, look at the videos I did on Instagram. Come on, I'm ready. Yeah, let me play. Go on. Let me play. So you don't want to ask Alexis. The manager might have to make a bit of an executive decision on that one. But West Ham at home on the opening day, well, not the opening day of the season, the opening weekend of the season. It's Sunday, of course, a 1:30 kickoff. I think that gives us a good chance to continue where we left off in preseason. And, you know, you can't read a huge amount into what you do in preseason other than you want to build some momentum, you want to get the fitness up, the sharpness up, and if you go in with a series of good results under your belt, it helps your confidence. That's just the way it goes. There's a momentum to football, whether it's preseason or not, and we've come off the back of 5 wins, and I think it's 3 clean sheets in a row against Wolfsburg, against Lyon, and, of course, against Chelsea, who couldn't score against us last weekend. So we're in good shape, and the squad appears to be in good shape, and everybody seems happy and ready for the start of a new season, talking about title challenges. And look, we've got to make sure we get off to a better start than this time last year. Hopefully that's exactly what we'll do. So look, we better leave it there for this particular Arsecast. We'll be back next Friday with another regular Arsecast, but James and I will be here on Monday at some point with the Arsecast Extra. He, of course, is in Edinburgh, and I believe they have internet there. Tom, I think, installed the internet in Edinburgh, so thanks to Tom, and we'll be able to talk to James on Monday. Let's keep fingers crossed for Sunday. We can get our season off to a good start. Talk to you on the Arsecast Extra on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. Cheers. Bye-bye.
You stand in front of this court, accused of the most heinous of crimes. Even hundreds of years ago, when barbarians and Philistines ruled this land, they deemed this behavior unacceptable. Every day I see all manner of reprobates and ruffians, and people who should be sent far away on boats. But you, sir, what you did is inconscionable. Now, Mr. Wenger, how do you plead to the crime of not shaking hands with another man after a football match? Look,
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.